Well, this email in from New York City from a Mrs. Price. It says, listen to this, George. I had two friends of mine coming home by Queens Boulevard. There was a young lady waiting for a bus by the light next to Calvary Cemetery. So they asked her if she wanted a ride home because she was in a gown. So they gave her the ride home. Well, when we got to her home, we knocked at the door and her mother answered. And we said, well, miss, we have your daughter. And she said, I'm sorry, but my daughter's been dead for a year. So my friend went back to the car. The girl was gone. True story. It was in a paper. Mrs. Price in New York City. Scary. In a moment, we're going to be talking with a gifted psychic medium about all kinds of things that are strange right here on Coast to Coast AM. Brooklyn-born Mary Occhino is a gifted psychic medium with a very diverse following from around the world. Her clients are dispersed throughout many countries, and her readings are done on radio and television to mass audiences. Early in 2002, Mary met Dr. Gary Schwartz, whom you know, a Harvard-accredited professional dedicated to the study of psychic phenomena. Previously, he had conducted clinical research on John Edward, George Anderson, and others as the fundamental research for his book, The Afterlife Experiments. Shortly after meeting Mary, Dr. Schwartz began scientific trials to evaluate Mary's gift. What he discovered was shocking even to his trained eye. Mary, he felt, was as good, if not better, than many of the mediums that he had ever studied. She is our guest on the full program tonight on Coast to Coast, Mary Occhino. Hi, Mary. How are you?
Oh, I'm terrific, George. How are you?
Good,
what a pleasure this is.
Likewise. And you're up there in New York now, aren't you?
Absolutely. Manhattan.
Wonderful area. What's new up there, by the way? How are people during this season?
They're really good. The energy in New York is vibrant and much more spiritual than I believe ever before.
Well, they keep fighting back, don't they?
We do. It's resilient. Wow. It is completely resilient, but not just coasting. You know, sometimes when we consider a person resilient, it's just like you're back to normal. I believe people in New York became better.
No question about that. Mary, how did you get involved in psychic research?
Dr. Gary Schwartz, as far as the research, he found me. I was, at the time, I was behind my walls. I've written two books. One is called Beyond These Four Walls, which was just my journal, because I have multiple sclerosis. But I am not, I don't want anybody to think, oh my God, poor thing. I was at one time relapsing, remitting, but at one point I was behind those walls inside for about 7 years, really not leaving the house. And I was doing my readings only by phone. And it was kind of weak, very weak, let's put it that way. And I was writing a journal. And that was my book, Beyond These Four Walls, was really called Within. And Dr. Gary Schwartz heard of me through word of mouth and called me up for a reading. I did not know who he was, never heard of the man. And I gave him a reading, and he asked, after the reading, I have to see you. I'd love to come out to New York. When I'm in New York, can I come to see you? And I said, yeah. I said, but you're going to have to come to see me because it's hard. I can't really get in the car. The driving, people think that MS is just, I'm fine now, but it wasn't at that point. I couldn't drive. And not even the drive. It was, I couldn't sit in a car for that long to get into, from, I live in Long Island.
Very uncomfortable for you, wasn't it?
No, the equilibrium was so bad.
Really?
Oh, no, it wasn't just uncomfortable. It was the equilibrium. I would get nauseated and sick. See, MS hits every part of your body. And to me, it hit every part. I mean, I was sensitive to everything. I was like the girl in the bubble. I smelled, sounds. I was became super, my five senses. And that's why I believe my MS became off the charts. Not my MS, my psychic ability became off the charts because of the myelin taken off the brain with the MS made everything so sharp. It's like the rubber on a wire.
Could you see then the difference? I mean,
oh,
could
yeah.
you track it like that?
Oh yes, that's why I was writing the journal. I couldn't get over it. I was always sensitive from when I was 7 years old when I had my first psychic premonition. My mother is psychic. My grandmother was psychic, but we never, come from an Italian American Catholic background. We weren't raised in believing that, walk around saying you were psychic because we thought it was against religion. At one, you know, this is back in the 50s and 60s.
Well, did you think it was normal?
Well, yeah. We thought it was, I thought it was that every mother can telepathically speak to their children. My mother did all the time. And I know it sounds strange. I believe me, it sounds crazy when I tell other people, you didn't know when your mother wanted you? They go, no. I said, you never had that feeling? They go, yeah. I said, but you never heard her say, like, Mary, come home, Charles, come home, or come here now, I need you now? And they would say no. And I said, gee.
Well, I remember my grandmother used to read tea leaves. So, you know, right. It's, you know, people from the old country
right.
had these old customs.
Right, and my grandmother and my mother, they had this thing that if they didn't want to shout out the windows, they would just think for their children to come in, no matter what, not the normal times like 5 o'clock when dinner, anytime. My mother used to play games with us, like telepathic games, and just see who would connect first, me and my brother Charles. And then I would run up the stairs and say, Mom, did you call me? And she goes, oh, you heard me. I said, I told Charles I heard you. She goes, yes, but I didn't call you with my voice. I called you with my mind.
The family didn't need the bell. You just thought about it.
Well, we still do that. And I do it with my grandchildren now and my own children.
Then how did this equate to being a psychic medium? I mean, when did you start really concentrating
on the other side?
Yeah.
Okay. That really happened, I would tell you, probably around 1988, 89.
Okay. I'm going to have you back off your phone, by the way, just a little bit, Mary. Oh. Okay?
Is that better?
Just a little bit. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I would say 1988.
No, that's worse now.
That's worse.
Yeah.
You want me to closer in?
Well, no. It's just that when if you're really close, you're popping your peas a lot. So
oh,
just,
I do that.
Just give
time.
Me a happy medium there.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
So to speak.
Happy, so to speak, right? I would say around 1988 or 89, around there. You know, when I first gave my readings to people, I would never tell them that I was a medium. I would just say I'm a psychic. That's what I do, and because whatever came in, I would just say, well, if it comes, it comes. I wouldn't.
Well, why wouldn't you tell them that? It's not that you were ashamed of it.
No, I wasn't ashamed. I wasn't ashamed because, but you know why? Because I didn't believe it was my expertise. I was more of a life director, and I could give you premonitions and do that, but I wouldn't just call upon or look for a person who's crossed over.
Now, hold on. What's a life director?
A life director is, that's what I do also. It's I didn't choose that. That's what my guides told me it was. It was like some people would call me up and ask for a reading, a psychic reading, a premonition. Things were going on in their life. They weren't really looking to connect with someone who had crossed over. And the majority, and this is going back, you know, not until really John Edward came into the picture with his TV show, which we're all grateful for. I know
sure.
I am.
Well, he made the world wake up.
He opened doors. He made it okay. And not that it wasn't okay, but he solidified it. But before that, most people really wanted to connect or were open to connecting to just premonitions and what was going on with their life. That's what they really came to psychics for. And if I got information from a guide or whatever, I kept that more or less to myself because I wasn't sure that they wanted to hear this from a loved one. And so one day, I was getting information. I was doing a seance, in fact. I was doing with friends. We were doing playing around with a Ouija board.
Oh, no, not a Ouija board.
Yeah, I was. There was.
Right.
And this is, but going, this is going back in 87.
Before you knew better.
Before I knew better. This is about 20 years ago. And during this, it opened up. There was no doubt in my mind now I was getting a person. I was not only getting a person, I was getting this man called, and one of my sons was with me, called Quicksilver.
Quicksilver?
Quicksilver. He was an African-American gentleman who was in the Civil War. And he, and this is such a funny story, but it's real, and he's given me all this information, told me where he was from. He told me the phone number where his family, his lineage still lived. And we were just writing down everything, and he gave me everything. And he told me how he died in the battle, that he really, you know, his whole battalion had died, and we were just taking all this, and I was just like amazed because I was channeled by this person. And then after my one son's car went to sleep, and my daughter, she had been asleep, she's little, and my brother Michael and his girlfriend at that time were there, and they left. My older son Christopher was out with friends and had no idea what we were doing. He comes in late because he was like 18, 19 years old, mm-hmm. and we're all sleeping. He wakes me up about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, knocking on my door as if he was like 12. Ma, and I'm going, what is it? He said, Ma, there's a man in the living room. And I said, a what? He says, there's a man. I said, well, then call the cop. He says, no, Ma. This is a man in a Civil War uniform.
Oh, quick.
He's African-American, and he's standing in the corner. And I can't move. And I'm going, Christopher, that's Quicksilver. He goes, who? and he was there. And my son saw him clear as a bell. And then I knew that that opened all the floodgates. And I really didn't use the Ouija board anymore after that. But then I knew I was a medium.
Okay, but you seem to have had a pretty good experience with the Ouija board. It doesn't sound like Quicksilver.
They weren't all good. Yeah, well,
oh, because it didn't sound like Quicksilver was
a
bad...
Oh, he was a good man.
Yeah.
He was a good man. No, he was a good man because he was just showing me that I had the ability. But I played with the Ouija board for many, many years before that. And they were not good experiences. They were not, because there were doors opening and shutting. And
well, why didn't you stop, Mary, if you were getting some of these bad things?
Because, you know what, most people back in the 70s and 60s, when I started doing this, not only me, I would go to other people's houses, they'd have a Ouija board. And, you know, the girls get together, and instead of other people go Friday night out, I used to read cards, do Ouija boards, do things like that. But not just me. The other girls would do it, say, Mary, do it. When you do it, the thing just goes crazy. But I would always say, you know, you have to make sure you pray. You have to make sure if one person calls, you cannot call upon a spirit. You just say whoever's there. Like when you do a reading, when I do a reading for a person who's passed over, or a client comes to my office, and they're looking to connect. They don't tell me with whom. They're just looking to connect.
Well, did you believe?
It's like a seance.
Did you believe the Ouija board to be just a game in the early days, or did you know it was real?
I always felt it was real.
All right.
I always felt it was real. I never thought it was a game. But I always told people, don't assume it's a game. And don't, other people would be looking, what I realized that certain people that were involved in the Ouija board, or could be 8 people at one time, some of them were actually trying to test it subconsciously if some evil can come through in their mind. And that's the only way, the time that it happened. I do not recommend anyone using it.
I think you're right. I think some people, when they play around with a Ouija board, which I don't anymore, that they want something to happen. They want evil to pop in. They want to get scared.
They do. And that's the only time you get that, and I would say, uh-uh. And then I would never do it with anybody who had that kind of mindset.
What's the worst experience that you've had with a Ouija board? I mean, the one that just even frightened you to death?
I would tell you that a friend of mine named Lorraine, I haven't seen in about 25 years, that brought so much bad luck, she believed, negative energy to her home, that she not only had to throw it out, she took an axe to it and cut it up and chopped it up. Because there was nothing that went right in her house. Nothing. She got robbed. Her dog died. Her daughter was like flipping out, like trying to, a 10-year-old like put the house almost on fire.
Oh, God.
There were like all these things within a week of doing the Ouija board. And I wasn't doing it with her. She had gotten involved with her other friends doing it constantly. And I said, so don't do it. You don't know what you're doing. Don't do it. And all those things happened. And she called me up one day about 1 o'clock in the morning saying, no, I have to throw, I'm going to throw it. I said, throw it out. Don't use it anymore. She said, I'm not only throwing it out. She took an axe to it, went into her backyard, chopped it up. She was so petrified of it.
Well, once she realized
that it was bringing evil.
Right. She chops it up. Now, did it stop after that for her?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did.
That's
and
awesome.
I, and what I did was I went to her house and we did a cleansing. with a smudge, like a sage smudge, and, you know, we prayed and, you know, and had to be gone and made sure she never did it again. And I don't think I've done it. Then she promised, she made me promise then to get rid of mine, and I did. And she came to my house and she cut mine up. Oh, she was not happy unless she chopped it up.
When we come back in about a few minutes after we take the break, I want to talk about how Gary Schwartz tested you. You know, he's been on the program quite a bit, and I respect him and the work he has done. As a matter of fact, he was just on a what we call the skeptic's cage. He was battling a skeptic who didn't believe any of this. And I want to ask you about that, too, in a moment, what you would do if you were confronted by someone who just doesn't believe. As you grew into this, prior to getting tested, before the world really started to figure out just who is Mary Rose and what are her abilities, did you feel as if, Mary Rose, this was a gift from someone, from God?
I just thought it was part of who I was. Yes, I do believe it's a gift from God. I do believe it's a gift from, but I believe that we all have this ability to be this sixth sense. It depends, but not all of us can be, like, we all have an ability to walk, usually, hopefully. We all have an ability, some of us, to run, but we all can't be Olympic winners.
But do you think that you have a mission here?
Excuse me,
sir? You have a mission here?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. When I tell people, they say, you know, is there a certain time that you can give me a reading, or when do your readings start? I said, my readings start when I open, not even when I open my eyes. I give my readings even in my sleep.
But are you here to help the living or the dead?
Both. I'm here for everyone, because there is no death.
It's just another step, isn't it?
It's just another step. And I am is like, you know, a satellite. And you know, when you connect, like you try to get your station on the radio, and if you're not just in tune right, you don't get it.
Are there some days you're better than other days?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would tell you it has to do with not better than, but it has to do with the energy you're dealing with.
Has there ever been a day, Mary, where you thought, my gosh, I've lost this. I've lost this ability to communicate.
No, I know there's what the reason is. If there's a day, I just feel like
it's not there.
I shouldn't do it. I shouldn't. It's only because I'm maybe burnt. Maybe I've done 30 readings or 40 readings. That's it, but it's always there.
What about environmental conditions? Does it have to be daytime, nighttime? Does it matter?
Daytime, night? No. That doesn't matter. No.
How about weather outside? Nothing like that?
No.
Okay.
Nothing. The only thing that would bother me as a human being would be smells.
How so?
Because I have, with the MS, I'm very sensitive to smells.
Okay.
And plus, not only that, but, you know, when I'm clairaudient, clairsentient, so what I would never have somebody, when I do readings, I'll tell a person, don't wear colognes or perfumes when you're coming for a reading. Don't have anything that's like a heavy odor, because I won't know where I'm getting the smell from.
Yeah, exactly. Because in some cases, you do get it from the other side, don't you?
I do, like, all the time.
I mean, I've heard stories. People say, you know, my grandmother loved this cologne, or she loved roses, and then people feel as if she's in the room with them, and they smell roses, or they smell her cologne.
Absolutely. And you know what? Sometimes odor comes to me, like, if you're smelling roses, that may just be an opening to a door of a whole vision I'm getting, because I'll smell, like, say, a rose, and I'll get a color of the peach, almost like a sherbet color. And that sherbet color maybe give me another feeling and bring me to a room. So all that smell opens doors to a whole vision. So it's necessary. When I tell a person, I would recommend any person going for any reading never to wear colognes or perfume.
All right, stay with us, Mary. We'll be back. I've got so many things to talk with you about when we come back. Also about spirits who make phone calls. Your website, celestialwhispers.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back in a moment. We're talking with Mary Ochino, her book, Sign of the Dove, Mary Rose's Messages from the Other Side. All right, and we're talking with Mary Rose Ochino. We're going to be back with Mary Rose in just a moment as we talk about her psychic abilities. Some of them are truly remarkable. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest, Mary Ochino. Mary, tell us, how did you meet Dr. Gary Schwartz, and tell us about the testing procedure?
Okay, well, like I said, Gary, I gave Gary a reading, Dr. Schwartz a reading, and then he came to New York, and we did more face, not we. The first one was on the phone, and then he came to my house on Long Island, and we did one in my office, another reading, and then he said, he was going to set up me reading about 10, 15, maybe even 20 different psychologists, psychiatrists, whatever they were, a lot of skeptics. And I would do double-blind studies. And that was, they would call me. I would not know who they were, maybe just the first name, and give them readings. And they would test them, you know, point, minus one, point, however they do it scientifically on how accurate it is on not only on their who they were, what they did. I knew nothing of these people. I didn't know what kind of jobs they had, what they didn't have. Just in they came, and they would just call. And there was about 20 of them. And then one day he called me. We did this for about 2 years. So it wasn't like overnight kind of thing.
Right, okay.
And then one day he called and says, there's something very special that I'd like you to do. And he says, it's another double-blind study. He says, but I'm not going to tell you if it's a man or a woman. I said, fine. He says, I'm not going to tell you the person's name at all. Nothing. You're going to get nothing. I said, fine. He said, I have two other psychics that are going to be doing this with you. You're not going to know who they are either. It wasn't like I couldn't. We were going to be all different places.
Yeah, so you couldn't share information.
We couldn't share any information. So, and I said, fine. He says, what I want you to do is meditate on the person of who you're going to read and not knowing anything about the person, and give me information on their lost loved ones as well as information for the here and now. And I'll call you back on, let's say, 2 weeks from now, and you give me what you have.
So he gave you 2 weeks to work on it?
Yeah.
Okay.
To mentally work on it. And then he called me up on that day. I did not speak to the person. And Gary gets on the phone, and it was on. He says, Mary, you're on speaker. This is going to be audio and digitally recorded. He said, on his side.
Right.
And to have everybody know, just to have it down documented that I was not there and whatever it was. And I said, fine. He says, read us what you have. Because we were supposed to meditate and get
jot
pages
everything
on
down.
It.
Okay.
And I had about 4 or 5 pages. And after I gave the information, I said, the person I'm reading, I feel like I see MD or PhD, which leads me to believe it's a doctor, or it goes by the name doctor. I'm seeing Gandhi. I said, I'm seeing the white outfit of Gandhi. I'm seeing India. I said, so the person I'm feeling makes me feel has some kind of India background. And I went on and on for pages like that. And then finally I said, this has got to be a man. He's a doctor. I'm seeing that. And also I'm seeing, tells me, a loved one who's crossed over shows me, he puts his hand directly to his throat and he tells me he's the uncle of this man. And that he, before his passing, he had no vocal cords. And that they were removed because of cancer. But he lived a long time with this. It wasn't like 6 months before or a year before. He may have lived a couple of years or many years without vocal cords. And then cancer finally took him. And that's when I heard a voice other than Dr. Schwartz.
Right.
And it was Deepak Chopra.
Oh, my gosh.
And he says, okay, that's enough. That was my uncle. And that was the double blind study was with Deepak Chopra, and that's why Dr. Chopra wrote the little blurb on the front of my book.
That's right. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
Mary Ochino is extraordinary.
And it was I was like, whoa, And then I heard his voice. It was like, I was like, oh my God, how lucky am I to have that opportunity? But I'm glad it's better to me, a psychic or a psychic medium or psychic, a psychic medium is a psychic. Not all psychics are psychic.
You're a psychic first, right?
Right, right. But it's always better for either a psychic or a psychic medium to know nothing about a person, I believe. Nothing, absolutely nothing about a person before the reading.
No, you're right. I've talked with Hans Christian King. He calls himself a psychic medium as well. Mm-hmm. But I've also talked to a lot of psychics who are not mediums. They'll admit they're not mediums, that mm-hmm. they don't communicate with the other side.
Right.
That, primarily they're looking at future events and things like that. Mm-hmm. So you're absolutely right. And there aren't a lot of you, Mary. There's mm-hmm. there really isn't.
No, I know there isn't. There are a lot of people that say they are now because it's like it's the in thing.
It is the in thing right now.
It's the in thing. But I'm not knocking. I'm not saying that people can't try to be. But it's to be accurate in what you're doing and to really. It's got to be your life's work, and that's the only thing that I really get annoyed with. I get hurt for the people who are calling, not calling me, or calling other people that really haven't. I'm not saying they have to have a. I'm not judging them, but for the frauds that are out there, and they're preying on these people. They're not even really trying.
What's the percent of frauds out there, Mary?
Oh, I would say it's probably 60%.
You know what? And I would have guessed maybe even higher.
I'm being kind.
You are.
I'm being kind. And I always tell a person there are good psychic mediums out there, but always go by word of mouth who recommended them.
Of course, the amazing Randy would say the percentage is 99.99999% frauds. He might even say 100%.
Well, if you don't have anything nice to say, my mother always said, if you don't have anything nice to say, Mary, say nothing. So I'm pleading the fifth here.
All right. Was Deepak Chopra, he's been on the program before, mm-hmm. was he impressed by the fact that you saw someone of Indian descent?
No.
Or the vocal cords portion?
The vocal. It was because it was the whole picture, but it was more because I had, and Gary was also, and in fact, they actually put it into a medical journal.
You're in Gary's new book.
I'm in a few of Gary's books. I'm in the paperback version of The Afterlife Experiments and The Truth About Medium. That's his new book, The Truth About Medium.
Right.
And that's about the experiment with these, and Alison Dubois from the show, The Medium. She was one of the other psychics.
Exactly. Exactly.
And Laura Campbell, which I've never met any of them.
Would you like to?
Sure.
What psychic medium would you like to meet? If you could only meet you, a psychic medium, but you could only meet one,
John Edward.
Why?
Well, I've met him when he was, I met him at 17. He gave me a reading when he was 17 years old at a psychic fair for $15.
He was 17 years old?
17 years old, the only boy there giving readings, and he was the most accurate, and it was very funny, and it was like, I believe in total synchronicity and coincidence. I believe there is no such thing as coincidence. I believe that in my book, Signs of the Dove, that's what signs are. Signs are two coincidences that happen. You go, wow, isn't that something? Two of them that happen is a miracle waiting to happen.
I have no doubt about that.
That's what it is. And when I met John Edward, and we had the reading, he gave me a reading. It was very, very accurate. And I'm a big skeptic of other psychics. I'm sorry. I go there not looking to defame them. I'm just seeing, if I call a spade a spade.
So you're not trying to debunk them?
No, I wasn't.
Okay.
I didn't even know he was a kid. I was like, people saying, go to the kid. And I said, okay, let's try the kid. Go to the kid. He was 17 years old. So I went, and he was very good. And I would, I would like to meet him, like to sit and talk to him, was because I know we work the same, more or less the same way, and I know it's his life work, and I would like to talk to him not about his readings, but what do you do with it after?
Well, I've got to ask you this. When you talk to the dead, mm-hmm. what do they tell you about the other side?
they don't make me feel, you know, I don't see the clouds in what we consider heaven. They don't make me feel like it's hell, but they don't make me feel like I'm in a brownstone in Manhattan either. I believe everybody's heaven is different, and they just give me this feeling, a solid feeling of peace.
Are they already on the other side? And by that I mean, have they gone to the light when you're dealing with them? Okay, so they're on the other side then. It's not like they've made their
transition.
All right, okay. So they've made the transition. They're on the other side, and then they describe it as what? It's not heavenly looking, but it's not hell looking. What is it?
No, it's. Can you think it's different to each person? That's what.
So each soul
has a different image of heaven. Some could, they'll give me a feeling like they're in Hawaii.
So they all describe something different to you?
They'll give me a feeling. They don't all come to me and say, "Well, let me describe what it's like." They don't. They just give. I get the feeling or an image.
But you think they've created this image?
Yes. I think heaven can be whatever we choose it to be.
All right. Now, are there others with them, or are they in this area?
Yes.
Okay, they're not in there by themselves. Then.
No, they're never alone. They never.
Well, but now, do they create that too, though? By that, I mean, let's assume a spirit loves the ocean and Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And like you say, he's created his or she has her heaven around Hawaii.
That's for that moment or that day. That's not eternal.
Oh, so they could change
it. They can change it anytime they want.
All right. And do they bring in then other souls into their environment, or do these
other souls just go in there on their own?
Yeah,
just go in like you when you're on an airplane, you decide to go to Hawaii. It's not because you invited the other people on the plane. They decided to.
Do they create activities? I mean, what do they do?
Oh, absolutely. They work. No, it's more work than they may swim. They may do a lot of things that they choose to do, but they're more here. You work harder on the other side than you do here. And it's not physical or hard labor.
Right.
It's really, they're trying to teach us the whole time. And we're like ants to them. Once they've crossed over.
I mean, do they, in their environment of heaven, mm-hmm. do they go to a restaurant? I mean, are they living life like they always lived it?
No, I don't see it that way. They don't make me feel like they call and they have a waiter who's a spirit come and take their order. That's not the feeling.
All right, so they're not recreating their earth.
They're not recreating an image. If they choose to have a pasta, they can have it any time, or an ice cream. Did you ever have a dream, George, that in your dream, you see, I've had this because there are many foods that I haven't been able to eat for 15 years. And I've woken up from a dream. It's like a visitation. It's so real that I've woken up my daughter in the middle of the night and said, can I eat cookies?
Just craving them, right?
No, because I've eaten them in my sleep.
Yeah.
And I've eaten
asking her a question if you can eat them.
Yeah, because I must have imagined that I can't eat them because I just had a bunch of them in my sleep, and that it was so real.
You thought
that
you
I could
did.
I could still taste the sweetness.
Yeah.
And that's what. And she's going, Mom, don't even think about it. You can't eat cookies. And so I said, all right, I had to wake her up because I was afraid that I would actually walk in my sleep and go in the closet and eat them because they would make me sick then. But that's how they try to explain to me how, because that's a reading to me. It wasn't because I had a craving. Some things I eat that I don't even want. But it's how they would taste it, how they would eat it. And it's like when we dream it and it's so real, that's the living consciousness, our mind can create it.
Well, do these souls mm-hmm. that have created this environment, do they then eventually get reincarnated? Do those souls come back into other humans at a later date? And do they then leave that heavenly environment they're in?
Yeah, when they feel there are certain things that they haven't accomplished in the last life that they can with the next. They'll wait until another person is going to be born, which they'll be the soul to, that can achieve more things or better things that they couldn't, either spiritually, financially, lovingly that they didn't accomplish in this life.
Whose choice is it to come back? Theirs?
Yeah, it's always our choice. The choice is always ours.
So
when we decide when. We decide our parents. We decide our friends. We decide, you know, if we realized that we would stop going to therapy so much regarding and talking about our parents because we decided. we really did. What lessons we can learn by them or from them.
So there's not some angel up there saying, all right, it's time for you, George, to go back.
No, that's only in movies.
I remember,
We choose that.
I remember the play Carousel, where Billy Bigelow died, and they started that way, where they sent him back.
Right.
So they create this environment. Now, that's the good one. That's the heaven type, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about the souls from hell who, I'm sure maybe you've stumbled across them, haven't you?
Really? I would have to tell you, really.
Why is that? Why do you have the ability to deal with the souls that have, I guess, progressed?
Because I believe hell is on earth.
So you don't believe that there is this evil spot, unlike where they were, these other people, opposite that.
Right. I do believe that there can be evil. I do believe that demons exist. I do believe that. I mean, the Ouija board showed me that.
Sure.
Okay, I do believe that. So I do believe there's a hell or these evil, like devilish spirits. I do. But I do believe that a hell would be, to me, and what they make me feel is, like, say if I've done people who have been murderers. Not everybody calls me their father or mother or was a perfect person.
No, I guess
some
not.
People, you know what I mean? That's why when I say I'd love to talk to a medium that I would respect, because what do you do with the information? Only another medium who's read people like I have I've been doing this for over 27 years. And this, you know, I've read people that have not lived very good lives, some of them. And when what do you do with that information? I'm getting information that sometimes on murders that they've committed, where the bodies are and things like that could be 30 years ago. And those people who have crossed over, who have committed those kind of crimes that belong, that we would think in hell, well, their hell is they recreate all those crimes over and over, and they're so sorry for it, they just keep seeing it over and over, and that's what they make me feel like their hell is like.
You've never, though, been confronted by the devil or anything like that?
I will tell you, confronted, I believe so. My son Christopher comes into this again, because when I was living in Brooklyn, I was 1978, and I was, at one point, I was going to church a lot. I don't know if you know what a novena is.
Oh, I'm Catholic, sure.
Oh, okay. So on a Monday, and that tells you what kind of a social life that I had, that on Monday nights, you know, other girls were single, and parents, I was at novena.
You go to novenas. Yeah,
with this girl, Lorraine, my girlfriend Lorraine.
By the way, I was not at novenas on Monday,
okay. But I wasn't always on novena, but she was trying to get me, and I loved doing it anyway. I grew up in parochial schools all my life. And so on a Monday night, and I worked during the day, I had two little boys, and a single parent, and she would say, we have to go to church, but we got to stay right in the front pew. Because you figured the closer you were to the statue or the crucifix,
the better off you were.
Yeah. Right. So we were doing these novenas every Monday night. And it was in the month of August for the Blessed Mother. So, and I believe the more spiritual you become, the more psychic. And doesn't mean you have to be Catholic. Doesn't mean you have to pray a specific prayer. But the more that you meditate or form of meditation, you know, because not everybody out there is Catholic, but it's a form of meditation and releasing your mind in away from the everyday, all the problems that we allow, either it's the supernatural or the other side to communicate with us.
Hold that story right there, Mary. We'll come right back with you right there in the front row of the church when we come back at Coast to Coast AM.